I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio. And you're listening to episode number 165 of the Functional Nerds Podcast. Hi, John.
Hi, Patrick. How are you doing? Good. Is Patrick Hester. He is an author, blogger, and podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and you can follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. I am John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Anilio.
And actually, John, before you go into that, normally when people ask me how I am, I say I'm doing well.
Okay.
And it throws people because they want you to say good, but I am well is more better English.
It's better.
Yeah. It's more better. It's more better. No,
it is. You're right.
And it actually got me in trouble at the job that I worked at that I did not like, at the giant cable conglomerate television company that I am not ever going to name, but one day I'll dish about, They didn't like that I would answer the phone, and when someone would say, "Hey, Patrick, how are you?" I'd say, "I'm well." And they're like, "No, people don't. They don't want you to say that you're well. You have to say that you're good. You have to dumb it down." I don't know why.
Well, I don't know. I spend my days correcting children on their grammar, so I gotcha. So I hear you. So today is a very special episode of the Functional Nerds. It's going to be like one of those very special episodes of Different Strokes when, Dudley was at the bike shop.
What are you talking about, John?
This is going to be a segment that Patrick recorded, a panel that he did at Worldcon this past year about podcasting. And Patrick has the audio, and it's a good piece of work. So Patrick wants to put it out there. So that is going to be our episode this week. So Patrick, what else can you tell people about the panel before they listen to it?
This was a panel. It's called Creating a Memorable Podcast. And this was on Monday morning at 10 a.m. after the Hugos. So obviously the room was packed. It was just, I couldn't believe the number of people who showed up. It was, just line out the door. It was just horrible. And I had Stefan Rudnicki, who is what is his exact title? He does all the audio stuff for Lightspeed.
Oh, cool.
Okay. I believe it's Stefan. David Farnell, or maybe I'm flipping those two. Anyway, one is a voice actor, one is the guy from Lightspeed. I'm pretty sure Stefan is the one from Lightspeed. And Julia Rios. And Julia is part of the whole Skiffy and Fanti family of people who do the podcasts over there. So actually, Skiffy and Fanti did show up, and I did heckle them for showing up. And we also scheduled was Kat Valenti, but Kat did not show up. I'm not surprised at all, because as it was, my ass was dragging.
Yeah.
Because at 1 a.m. The night before.
You have a dragon ass? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I was at 1 a.m. the night before. I was in the Sifwa Suite at the Hugo Losers Party going, I have to be at a panel at 10 a.m. The responsible thing would be to go to bed right now. Apparently, Kat did not do that.
Yeah.
So, it was about creating a memorable podcast. We talked a lot. It was just a good hour. Or 55 minutes, something like that. I was the moderator, and we had some fun with it. So I wanted to share it with our listeners.
Very good. All right, everybody, enjoy.
Yes, absolutely. So it is after 10, so all right. We might as well go ahead and get going since everybody's here. Woohoo! I was worried. We will go. This is the creating a memorable podcast. We are all podcasters, and we all do different things. Let's go ahead and say who we are and what we do. Let's start down here.
Hello and good morning. I'm Stefan Rudnicki. I am, it sounds like, and I am a podcaster.
It's like a, hi, Stefan.
No, I'm actually, until John Joseph Adams asked me to join the Lightspeed staff in creating the podcasts for that magazine, I didn't know what the hell a podcast was. I didn't understand it. I'm a professional audiobook narrator and producer. My partner here is Gabrielle. We have a company in Los Angeles that produces audiobooks for a lot of different publisher clients, author clients, etc. This has been a wild and woolly journey through the podcast world with Lightspeed Magazine, and that is what I have been doing for the last 3 years with Lightspeed, in addition to our core
and
business.
It's a lot harder to do audiobook narration in your house because you got to really get rid of all the ambient sound.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Next.
Well, you kind of have to control the ambient sound.
Yes.
You can never get rid of ambient sound.
Right. Well, this is why Kate Baker's brother built her a TARDIS recording studio thing that she puts over her mic and she can record.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next.
I'm David Farnell. I live and work in Japan, in Fukuoka, southwest Japan.
Do you know David Aki? He's an American living there.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, I don't know him personally, I've heard of him. Yeah.
I've known him forever. He's living there, too. He's teaching English.
Yeah.
In Fukuokawa.
Okay. I'm in Fukuoka, which is in the southwest.
Well, I'm mispronouncing it.
Oh. Is he in Fukuoka?
Yeah.
David Aki?
Mm-hmm. Never mind.
Oh, wait. Okay. I probably do know him then. I'm with Revolution SF. And I pushed to get us to have a podcast. And finally, they started a podcast. And I'm like, great. And then I got a job, and I couldn't head up the podcast, unfortunately. But I'm on there as often as I can be. So, yeah, I've been doing kind of guesting on the podcast pretty often for, how long have you been doing it? 4 years or something like that?
Very cool. Julie?
I'm Julia Rios. I am a writer, editor, podcaster, and narrator. So I narrate stories for podcasts like Podcastle and Pseudopod sometimes. I also narrate poems each month for the Strange Horizons podcast, where I am a fiction editor. And it was Hugo nominated for that this year. Yay! In addition, I also produce and host my own podcast, the Outer Alliance podcast, which is focused on Quilt Bag, that's gay, lesbian, queer, all the other things that fall into that spectrum, science fiction and fantasy. With lots of interviews and panel recordings and things like that. And I also appear on the Skiffy and Fanty Show, which is a general science fiction podcast where we talk about general things and occasionally do torture cinema, which is where we watch bad movies and then groan about them while drinking.
And Sean and Jen are horrible people. You should never, ever listen to that podcast.
They are horrible and they're wonderful. You should totally listen to that podcast.
Now, I worked this out last night, so this is the first time I'm going to do this publicly. I am the Hugo Award-winning fanzine editor / Hugo-nominated podcast producer of the Campbell Award-winning Merlafides I Should Be Writing.
Wow!
Yes!
Congratulations.
I also do Functional Nerds with John Anilio and, of course, SF Signal. So I've been doing a lot of podcasting, and I have Padawans out there. I've trained other people to do podcasts. Karen Burnham at the Locust Roundtable came to me and said, I want to do a podcast, but I don't know what to do. And I said, well, do you have a Mac? And she said, yes. And I said, well, then you've gotten, you know, the first step right out of the way. And I kind of showed her how to do that. And it basically came down to, I wanted to do a podcast. I started one. John Anilio did one. We met John DiNardo, who said, you guys need to talk to each other. And Anilio said, I've been thinking about having another voice on my podcast. And I said, I've been thinking about having another voice on my podcast, and other than the ones in my head. And he said, well, we should do something together. We should call it Functional Nerds, because I had mentioned that my boss called me a functional nerd. And from there, it kind of took off. And now, you know, we are raking in the podcast half pennies. So if you are thinking I'm going to get into podcasting to be rich, you might want to try instead to write a book and get published, because that's going to make it easier. Now, you will have to write about 50 of them before you start seeing any money coming in, but it's still a better career path monetarily than podcasting. How to create a memorable podcast. Well, Julia was talking about it. You know, Skiffy and Fanty, they do torture cinema. They do a lot of humorous kind of stuff, and they talk about everything. And then your other things, I mean, why don't you talk a little bit about How do you create a memorable podcast?
Well, with the Outer Alliance, it's mostly interviews. It's sometimes panel recordings. And the feedback that I get from listeners that is what they like about it is that I really go in depth with the interviews. And I try to connect with the authors and really get into where they are in their creation process. And basically, my theory on this and on being on panels and on moderating and everything related to that is if I'm not interested, then I can assume that no one in the listening crowd is going to be interested. So I try to just make sure I stay interested.
How about you?
Well, I think, I guess, connected to that in particular is also you have to be aware that some of the things, we have to be aware when we're podcasting that some of the things that we find very interesting that might get, you know, we might go to kind of down the rabbit hole into very personal stories and things like that. And we have to be aware that unless we're extremely interesting people, our audience may not be interested in some of the things that we ourselves are interested in. So it's kind of the flip side to that. I guess you have to find a happy medium there.
What do you think?
Again, my perspective is going to be a little bit different because what I do is either produce or narrate the fiction stories that John Joseph Adams picks. So I actually have a choice in terms of which stories are podcast and which are not, and there it's a question of an aesthetic, you know, which is going to work best on audio, which is going to grab the listener. But John's already made the basic choice for the month, which I choose half of, and usually it's a choice between A and A because the stories are so good. The next step really that's critical is casting. We use a number of narrators, some more regularly than others. Some who just happen to be in town for the day, we'll pop them into the studio and have them record a story if it is an appropriate one for their, everybody's expecting me to say voice, not, for their personality, mm-hmm. for their storytelling bent, for their specialty, for who these people are, and in some cases, if they're celebrities, if they're known in some way, does the story match who they're known to be, or does it somehow play with that? These are all factors to be considered, but principally it is what kind of match is this personality for that story? Can they mine it for the wealth of whatever it is, terror, humor, that is in there. As a narrator, when I record a story, which the reason I love recording stories, why I do these for free, in fact, on my own dime, is as opposed to recording a book, long thing where you spend days and days and days in the booth, and it's basically the same thing going on and on. If it's good, it's fine. If it's, you know, whatever. What you can do with a short story is to try stuff you can't do in long form. You can take risks in terms of accents, voices, character work that you can't do in long form. And that is great fun. So I choose the stories for myself that are going to be a tremendous challenge. And I'm hoping that the audience will find that creative interchange between me and the material, the author, in effect, or any one of these other people whom we cast, that creative interchange as memorable, absolutely.
So are you doing voices for different characters?
It depends on the writing. In general, less is more. I remember working with David Warner on some book a decade or more ago, and he says, I don't do voices. And in fact, he didn't. But what he did do was cadences, emphases, and you knew exactly who the character was who was speaking. It depends on what the writer has written. If there's a great, if the story hinges on a Cockney and an Australian talking to each other, you better get those accents right. And in fact, I'm going to try to stay away from that story. But that's one kind of story. Most of the time, you don't have to go very far. My favorite stories are first person, because then you can play a character. And then you don't have to worry about what the other characters sound like. All you're doing as who you are is reporting what they sound like. So you don't have to do crazy voices.
If you want to have fun at a WorldCon, buy an author a drink and ask them how much they loved the audiobook. Specifically ask Tobias Bakel, because he'll tell you when you get a white woman trying to do a Caribbean accent for... Yeah, I mean, it's hilarious. Do you do voices when you're doing narration, or do you just read it straight?
I don't do voices as much as some other readers do voices. I don't read it completely straight. I tend to modulate my own voice up or down depending on the character and cadences and rhythms. It's sort of, to me, in my head, what does this person sound like? And then that gets filtered through me.
Okay.
But I think that I do definitely have different sounds for the different characters.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. Well, and are the cadences, is that the Avery Brooks School of Acting?
I'm trained in Avery Brooks. But yes, I think that the main thing for me is that each character does sound distinct, so the listener doesn't get confused about who's talking.
Mm. Well, if you haven't already picked up on it, my secret is I'm trying to make you laugh.
Mm.
I'm always trying to make people laugh. I'm trying to make the person I'm interviewing laugh. I'm definitely trying to get John Nelio to not be able to do his standard intro in the very beginning of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm interrupting him. I'm trying to make him laugh. I'm trying to make him stumble because that's fun. And if I can make him get really frustrated, I know the person listening is just laughing their butt off. And at that point, they're relaxed. I actually have three rules of podcasting, and I have two of them that are very serious, and the third one is intended to break up the seriousness of the first two completely and make whoever I'm interviewing laugh and be comfortable. And my three rules of podcasting, and I tell them this because a lot of times what happens is I'll sit down to interview someone, and they are incredibly nervous. They don't like how their voice sounds. They don't know what I'm going to ask them because I don't prepare questions ahead of time. I don't like that. And so I just got to do something to make them relax. So my three rules of podcasting are: we're not going to talk about politics, we're not going to talk about religion, and we're not going to talk about barbecue, because those are the three most polarizing topics in this country, and Yankees get barbecue wrong.
Well, I think it's interesting that you have a different way of setting people at ease, because I interview a lot of people, and especially if it's their first time they've ever been interviewed, they can be very nervous.
Yes.
I usually start out all my calls before the recording starts by talking to them for a few minutes and asking, how are you feeling about this? And is there anything you particularly want to talk about or want to avoid?
Mm-hmm.
And then I also just sort of let them know that what I do with my own podcast is a lot of post-production editing. And I tell them I will cut out the ums and the stumbles, and I will make sure that what you say is the essence of what you said during this interview, and you will sound great. And that helps them to be more comfortable, because then during the conversation there are times where people stumble and they're like, oh God, I just sound like an idiot, and I'm like, don't worry, that part's going to be cut out, it's not going to be in the podcast, just start over.
Yes, I do something similar. I have a notepad going, and I'll have my pen. And as I'm recording, I can see the time, and I'll do timestamps as I'm going.
That's smart. I don't. I just
Great
end
idea.
Up clicking and dragging
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah, I do timestamps, and then I go backwards. So I start at the end, and I go to each timestamp, and I delete out whatever I need to delete out. Mm. And I do offer them. I say, I have an external hard drive. It's a 2-terabyte hard drive. So if there's anything at all that you say that you don't want on the internet for the rest of your life, please do let me know. I will put it on the blackmail drive, and if you ever hit the lottery. We have a question out here.
What do you recommend for editing software?
It's all going to depend on your computer, whether you have a Mac or a PC. Okay, so first thing you need to do is buy a Mac.
My husband will disown me.
Well, it'll end up saving you time,
yeah.
just on general things, like you won't have to spend money on firewalls and antivirus and all that kind of crap. But no, a lot of people use, was it Audacity?
Audacity
on the PC. There's also several different recording softwares that you can get as well. I always recommend, when it comes to any of this kind of stuff, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong here, get what you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And Audacity is free.
Yes. and get the best you can afford. So if you can afford to not get the headset microphone, if you can afford that bump up to that USB standalone mic, please do. Mm-hmm. The jump in quality is ridiculous. And the other thing is, always check out pawn shops. Mm. Because you can build a podcast career on the crushed dreams of some poor musician. And just get things ridiculously cheap.
Plus, you might pick up a guitar while you're at it.
Yeah.
You can use that to bludgeon your fellow panelists.
Yeah, right.
Remember, the Zoom H2 is better than the standalone mics?
It can be. Different people prefer it. This particular model is not being sold anymore. They've upgraded it to something else. It's like the H2 Zoom N or something like that. But yeah, these are great. Like I said, garage bands use these. They set them on a mic pole and they just record themselves because it'll do 360 sound.
It's a fabulous microphone.
It'll do 2-channel or 4-channel, and you can do waves, so you can get a high quality piece out.
We did an interview. This is the one we use, right?
Yeah.
With a big corporate guy who had written a bunch of news broadcasts off of the Nuremberg trials, and we were producing an audiobook of these that were performed now. And we went to New York to interview this guy, and he's sitting in his corner office on the second floor off of Lexington Avenue. Now, you don't even have to know New York to know how noisy that has to be. You know, the sirens going by, the whole thing. And this baby picked him up. And this guy's 92 years old. He talks like this.
Wow.
It got him. We were able to use it as part of the audio book. Which is stunning.
Does anybody else use Levelator?
Yes, Levelator is amazing. That's a free thing. And for the person who was asking about recording, when if you're doing things with different people and different volumes,
and someone's talking like this,
and yeah, if someone's talking like this and someone else is talking like this, you can get this thing called Levelator, and then you take your audio file and you run it through it, and it evens out the levels of the volume.
It does have to be a wave. It won't take an MP3.
Or an AIF.
Oh yeah, or an AIF.
It has to be a bigger file, not an MP3.
Yeah, because MP3 is a compressed format, so they're pulling out stuff to compress it down. I will say that I love Levelator. I use it all the time. When you have ambient noise, it will also level up the ambient noise.
Yeah.
But if you're using Audacity, you can run a filter to get rid of that extra noise. So do that first, then Levelate, and you're good.
So this is basic podcast 101. When you start a recording, let it record without you talking or anybody talking for like 10 seconds. Because then you get the sample of the ambient noise that you can filter out the way she's talking about. Because otherwise you're gonna get this weird thing where it's gonna do this to your voice and it's gonna be gone. Oh, Mr. Bomb.
I expect you to die.
or for more modern audiences.
Yes, Mr. Rain, I am here to bring that back.
sorry,
the microphone.
Sorry, one thing I wanted to ask about was, what about going over, you know, when you've got people in different locations? Our podcast is typically people all over America or even all over the world when I'm participating. Mm-hmm. How do you get good sound quality with that?
What do you do, Julie?
I just use Skype, and so that's free, and people come in with their own microphones, and that means that sometimes they don't have good quality microphones, and I do my best to filter out the noise and get the levels to be matching. But sometimes the sound quality is somewhat compromised. One trick that you can do, if you can get the people that are talking to you to know how to do it, is have everyone record themselves and only record their own voice, and then send you the file, and you can use all of those different files. And sometimes the sound quality there will be a lot better, because what it's recording, if you're just recording your own voice, it's just recording you on your computer and not over the internet, which makes a big difference.
You don't get the Cyberman effect so much. Yeah,
because with Skype, people can sound like robots for a while. It's you're going to be talking in that.
There's a way around that. So number one, if everybody's hardwired and they're not on the Wi-Fi, Skype doesn't do that.
Yeah.
It's a Wi-Fi thing.
Oh, really?
For some reason, Skype on Wi-Fi starts to cache you, and then you get that effect. The other thing that I do, because I am an audio Nazi, I make everyone wear headphones. because you got a lot of people who get the MacBook kind of laptops, or they get a ThinkBook or something like that, and it's got the built-in microphone. They're just using that, and what happens is they're using their speakers, and their speakers are feeding back into their microphone, and all you're getting is echo.
Yeah, and you can get this weird feedback noise. It will be horrible.
And I don't let people type. I'm notorious for saying, "Hey, who's typing? Stop that."
I also will, if I'm having a group conversation, sometimes ask people who aren't speaking to mute their microphones, because then if they type, I don't hear it.
Now, if you want video, just so you can see each other, on Skype, conference calling is free. Conference video costs. You have to pay for it. But there's a small company out of California who has launched, they're called Google. And they have this little thing called a Google Hangout Party. It's not the Hangout anymore, it's the Hangout Party. And if everybody has a Google Plus account, you can all be on video and you can see each other and you can still record that audio.
That's what we use.
And if you want to do the YouTube thing, you can actually have Google record it for you, and then they'll spit it out to YouTube, which is kind of cool. Do you guys do anything with multiple people?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And what are you using?
Skype.
You're just using Skype.
But I didn't know about the LAN versus Wi-Fi thing, so that's very helpful.
I have one more question.
Yeah.
What are you using to record the Skype?
I use a program called Audio Hijack Pro.
Okay.
Ooh.
And there's a free trial version of it. I bought it a few years ago. I actually really should get something better, but I'm not sure what to get at this point.
I'm using Wiretap Pro, which doesn't exist anymore now. It's Wiretap Pro Studio. And it gives me two track recordings. So it records me on one track and everybody else on the other track.
I think that must be what Sean uses for the Skiffy and Fanty show. My Audio Hijack Pro just records.
We don't want to talk about Skiffy and Fanty.
I'm on that too. It's relevant. but yes, my Audio Hijack Pro just records the entire call, so it doesn't do separate tracks, and that can be a little difficult if people are talking over each other and things like that.
By the way, Sean's right there.
Oh,
we see you, Sean. We see Jen in the back too.
What about the panel ends? I feel like there's going to be bloodshed.
We're doing that on purpose.
I've had this experience all weekend long where I feel like I'm in a murder mystery. I think I'm going to go home and write like Death at Lone Star Con, because the first night I was at dinner with people and we were like, how seriously do people care about the Hugos? And there was a kind of debate going, and then one person said, oh, people care. People would kill for them. And he was like, I'm serious. And I was like, that's a little extreme, and where's the dead body going to turn up? And then the next morning at breakfast, one of my breakfast participants was like, this fork is so heavy, you could bludgeon someone to death. I was like, how did you make that connection? So now, like, Patrick's going to kill Sean, or vice versa, and this will be complete.
Julia, do you know Sharon McCrum?
No.
The author, she's written a book about a murder at a con.
Oh, no.
And it's wonderful. Look at, I can't remember the title of the book.
I know the title. It's
Bimbo's. Oh, right, I've heard
yes,
this.
Fabulous book.
I have mixed feelings about
it. Bimbo's of the Death Sun.
That's it.
Was that your question?
Or you never do a banquet on
Friday. It's basically set, it's not by name, but it's basically set at an armadillo con of an Austin.
And they killed John Norman.
And then what's the book that the story that Shannon wrote about the brown coats?
The brown coats, the last stand of the stand.
It's California. San Diego, 2014.
The last stand of the California brown coats. Mm. Yeah.
Now, when you're doing the audio narration, do you get everybody together like and do a read through and record it, or do you just make them do it one by one?
It depends. We are known for our multicast productions. We pioneered, in fact, in 2001, the first productions that used multiple readers in third-person narrative. It had been done for quite a while. If you've got an epistolary novel or if there are first-person people talking, then you use, you know, different actors as the POV changes. Working with a couple of books by Ben Bova and Orson Scott Card, we found that the POVs were so personal, so specific, and so internalized that it made sense to have different narrators record them, even though it was third-person narrative. So, in a case like that, we're still doing essentially the text of the book. It's not dialogue, the narrative shifts from actor to actor, or from POV to POV, and these are recorded mostly independently, one actor at a time. They come in, they record their portions, next actor comes in, records their portions, so on and so forth. The critical element there, as with most things, is the director, who maintains a sense of unity among the different styles and forms and the relationship among the characters. We were involved in one production like that, which was produced by a company in New York, where all they did was they sent the texts out to various narrators, and they had to do them on their own, and it turned out to be a disaster. The people listening to it, even though the book was great, there was no consistency. We recently completed something that's very, very different, an audio play. Most of you know Ender's Game. It's going to be a motion picture out in just the beginning of November. We just completed recording Ender's Game Alive, which Orson Scott Card wrote as a, I was going to say radio-style drama, but it's not exactly radio-style. It is a dramatization of the original Ender's Game, full cast, huge cast, 180 scenes, over 100 characters. It's tremendous, 7 hours long, all in dialogue. Now, there's no way this is going to be recorded individually. This was budgeted, scheduled, and recorded like a motion picture. So you work out a schedule based on people's availability, based on your budget, based on a whole bunch of different things, and then you record out of sequence, and with everybody in the scene, in the room at the same time, with 8 open mics, sometimes people doubling, 2 per mic. That's a whole different thing. That's not audiobook recording. That's dramatic recording.
Yeah.
And it's great fun. It's fabulous.
Now, what about, what's like the process at Lightspeed?
Lightspeed, it varies. Most of the stuff, again, we're dinosaurs in this business because we really like to use directors. The tendency right now is for every audiobook narrator to be a podcaster, basically. You know, go into your closet and record the damn book, you know.
Well, there's even Audible and Amazon. There is a go-between now. Was it ACX?
Yeah,
ACX.
That's what it is.
And if you have a book published in Amazon, you can put it up on ACX and you can actually have narrators bid on your project and record your audiobook for you.
Wow.
Which is kind of interesting. Now, you said that you had gotten into this, but you're not really...
Yeah, I'm more of a guest. I wish that Deanna Taxopoulos, who is our kind of our podcast queen of the North out of Canada, or Gary Mitchell, who is doing our new Rev News cast.
I have friends in Canada. I don't hold it against them.
Yes. Well, I wish they could be here instead of me, but unfortunately, they're not at WorldCon. So,
what's your process, though? I mean, what do you guys? How do you pull something together?
Well, we come up with a theme for each week, and then we have a kind of a secret Facebook page that we've got a lot of people who have been on our, well, you know, just so that it's not out in the public of what's coming up next and all. And we have a number of people who have been on the podcast before or who want to be on the podcast, and we put them on that page so that they can see what the themes are that are coming up, and they can say, hey, I want to do that. And I have some expertise in that, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we do also seek new people. The last WorldCon I was at, AussieCon 4, I made some good friends and recruited them into the podcast. And then, you know, we get the time together, which is kind of difficult considering we have people from Australia, Japan,
yes.
North America, Europe.
If you've never had to mess with time zones before, time zones can be a killer.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to get someone in the UK on and it's going to be 2 a.m. I think the most fun we ever had a bunch of nerds was getting Levi Tadar on, and he was in Israel at the time. And so it was like 4 a.m. for him, and we were getting up super early. I mean, it was just this weird, weird thing. Yeah, time zones, fun.
Yeah, I'm always doing the podcast early in the morning and, you know, like 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still sort of waking myself up and all that, and everybody else is the evening, and you just have a different personality. You know, it is an odd personality mix that way. It's kind of, I have to take my dog for a while.
So what I'm taking away from what he's talking about is that show prep is kind of important, and I don't do show prep at all. Do you do show prep?
Well, in what sense?
Do you do anything beforehand?
Before the show?
Yeah.
I always have to find the person that I'm going to interview.
Yes.
And in that case, yes, I do something before the show. I find that person, I talk to them, I make sure that we have a time that is working for both of us or all three of us or whatever. And then usually, I don't like to come with a lot of questions written down. Mm. I like to do a more organic interview. Mm. But I do a lot of research into who the person is and what their work is, so that when I come into it, I can come into it saying, like, you know, oh, this is all the stuff that you've done. I'm familiar with it. I can ask a question that's maybe a little bit deeper than the question that somebody who had never heard of you would ask.
I still remember I had a couple people on, and I went to their websites. I grabbed their bios. I had them all written out, and I read their bios and welcomed them to the show. And they're like, yeah, I don't do that anymore. And I'm like, I got it from your website. Come on.
Update your website, please.
People are bad about that. You have to really, I do a little bit of internet stalking, and I kind of see if, you know, have they been active in social mm-hmm. media? What are they talking about now? Mm-hmm. What have they had published in the last year?
Right.
Because that's what they're going to be thinking about.
When we had Alaya Dawn Johnson on the podcast, I'd met her at AussieCon.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I read everything that I could find that was freely available on the web, and luckily she had a few short stories. And she's a fascinating person, so it was really great researching her. So yeah, whenever it's possible to do that kind of thing, we do. Certainly.
Yeah, John and Delia used to try to read every book before we'd have an author on. And it starts stressing him
books.
Out. And it starts stressing him to no end to have this whole book read by the time this person got on the podcast. Mm. And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there, you know, winging it. And so finally, he gave up. So he doesn't try to read the books anymore. I just do, like you're talking about, sometimes I go to their website. A lot of times it's funny, you know, you're looking to see what they've got, the most recent thing they've got published, and their website says the most recent thing they got published was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you look on Amazon and you look to see if they've been on Twitter and Facebook, and sometimes it's easier to tweet, hey, I had a book release last week, than it is to update your website if you don't know what you're doing.
It's called WordPress, people. WordPress. The other fun thing is when you are looking to get someone on the podcast, tracking down their contact information.
Yeah.
That can be tricky.
If they're not on social media and you go to their website, a lot of the old school authors, they don't have any contact information at all on their websites.
Mm.
They don't have a contact form. They don't have anything, because that's not what they're used to. You get into some of the newer authors, and they're all over the place. And it's a little bit easier to find them.
That's the new self-promotion model. Yeah, you've got to be out
sometimes
there.
Sometimes the people who don't have contact information get to them through their publisher or agent. So if you can track down that information.
Or use the Twitter hive mind.
Yeah.
Does anybody know such and such and how I can get a hold of them? Mm. You had a question?
No, just that you wouldn't think, but YouTube is a great source for getting a bead on someone. You know, if you put them in, because, you know, a picture says 1,000 words, you hear them speak. You can get little clips of things and information there.
Does anybody have any specific questions they want to ask other than Sean or Jen?
Other than Sean or Jen. Discrimination.
We've been teasing each other all weekend. It's just fun. Anybody have any questions? No? Software? Anything?
Oh, there's a
question. There's one.
I was wondering, is there any software that allows you to record multiple channels over the Skype so you can get every person on a separate track?
Maybe we should repeat that.
The question is there any program that will allow you to record multiple tracks over Skype so you can get every single person on a separate track? And I would love to know the answer to that.
Mm.
As far as I know, not with Skype. There is a way, I know, on a Mac that you can set up virtual mics. It's very complicated. There are walkthroughs on it. I don't know about on a PC. But you can actually set up multiple inputs, and you can assign each input to someone, but it's I don't know that it'll work with Skype.
Does Google Hangouts do?
No, and in fact, in order to record the audio on the Google Hangout, Normally, the Wiretap Pro that I use, I don't know about the one
you
use.
Yeah, Audio Hijack Pro will record it. It will just do system recording if you want to.
And that's what I have to do. Mm-hmm. I have to do Mac audio. Mm-hmm. So while I'm recording that, I also have to close my email, close everything else, because any little dings or anything that pops up will be recorded.
Yeah.
Which yeah, the unfortunate thing about that is that if you're in a Google Hangout party, and that means you're probably on Google Plus, and if anybody chats you, there can be some sort of warning ding. So you have to go into your settings and actually silence the alerts.
And don't have Facebook open on another tab, because yeah, Facebook now will now ding you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
I mean, the real answer to that is what's already been suggested, is to have everybody record into their own microphone.
Yes,
and then that's one way. You share it and mix it later.
Now, I've only ever lost one recording, but I have heard horror stories from other people, and that's why a lot of folks have taken to doing that. And whoever you're talking to will record on there. John Joseph Adams is good about that. If you ever have him on, he's recording on his end, too, just in case.
Oh.
You had a question back there?
Yeah, how do you take into account, or have you taken into account, what kind of changes that you made as a result of consumer feedback, response? Do you change any of your thought patterns based on things you hear from people who have been listening to your podcast?
Julie? Yes. Well, what I do, I really do like to get a lot of listener feedback if I can. And unfortunately, I'm aware that most listeners are passive listeners. Mm-hmm. I am a passive listener most of the time. I love podcasts and I listen to them constantly. And 99.9% of the time, I don't say a word to the people podcasting. And so I know that if I do that and I'm a dedicated podcast listener, my audience is mostly not doing that too. So when people say something to me, I know that it's really something that was important to them enough that they actually took the time to open up email and send it. And I try to take that into account. So my tailoring things is sort of, I will test things out and I will see what the feedback is. You know, I've had people read excerpts and I've sort of put the feeler out there, hey, how did you like this? And then I've said, you know, do you want more participants from outside to come in? So then I open things up, and occasionally, like, I'll ask questions to the audience and say, next time, send me your thoughts on this. And people like to add those in. And I didn't do those things at the beginning. I started off with more people reading excerpts, and those weren't actually as popular. People like to listen to a whole story. They don't really like to listen to part of a story. I didn't know that starting out. And I had to go through the process of sort of having that, getting the feedback, and then tailoring it to the audience response.
Hey, getting feedback is tough. We used to have a forum on Revolution SF, and we would when we started the podcast, we would put up we would start a forum thread for every podcast and ask people, what did you think? Da, 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 all this kind of thing. And this, crickets. I mean, nobody responds. And yet, then we would hear later on, somebody would say, oh, yeah, I love the podcast. I listen every week. And I'm like, well, why aren't you responding? We want to know what you like and what you don't like so we can make it better. And but there's not much. We will every once in a while get some feedback on it. It's often positive. Sometimes it's something that has really made somebody angry. It has, I think it's helped us do things to improve the sound quality a bit, to focus a little bit more on the topic and things like that. And I think the podcast is now, over time, has become leaner and more focused than it was originally, and that's all to the good.
It's a little tricky. Again, there are two issues here, and this is one that is a little bit daunting for us, because podcast is not technically the same as audio recording. Sorry, I moved away from the mic here. But
you have a voice, you don't need it.
thank you. A lot of our narrators, for example, will come in and say, oh, I'm recording a podcast, what do I have to do? And these are people who know very well how they do their work. The podcast is a delivery medium, and it's an attitude. That's what I'm trying to determine here. And I think it's that as opposed to the actual recording. Because the recording could be any number of different things and can be delivered in any number of things. So to go back to your question, in terms of podcasts, John Joseph Adams for Lightspeed has sent out a questionnaire recently where he's gotten back a bunch of response. And the most interesting one, the most telling one, for the podcast was that something like half of his respondents didn't know there were free podcasts with the magazine. Huh, okay, we got to do something about that. Mm-hmm. So it isn't so much a matter of response to the stories and to the recordings as to the podcast itself. Oh, what is it? How do we do? So there's some, there are people who are into podcasts, who are podcasters, who are podcast listeners, who are dedicated to it, who are addicted to it. And there are people who don't know what a podcast is from word one, which is where I was 3 years ago. So that's one thing. The other element is that once you send something out, it's like writing a story or writing a book. It goes out there. How often do you really get anything? You sometimes get reviews. You may get Amazon reviews. You may get reviews on Audible Inc. How useful are they? You don't know, because there are crazies out there who are going to say something that is completely useless to you. You know, and there are people who actually have something interesting to say. So you say, okay, what is it? 3, 4, 5 stars? That's about all you can look at and judge from realistically. And it's kind of unfortunate. I mean, one of the wonderful things about this con, about being here, is to actually, we've had a chance to talk to some of our actual listeners, you know, face to face, and that's incredibly rewarding and actually gives us food for thought, ideas, and so forth.
For me, whenever I get feedback, I always reply to it immediately, and so it's the same. I say, "Dear Lou Anders, thank you for your comments." No, we set up a voicemail, we set up a email, we have comments, we have all these ways for people to get back to us, and they never do. Very few have. Gail Carriger used to leave us voicemails going, "Oh, no, you were wrong, you were so wrong, and this is why, and I have to tell you."
And you don't play those?
And no, I did. Yeah. Then she left me a voicemail. She's like, "Patrick, I just have to be on the podcast."
Okay.
And so now she's on the podcast all the time.
It's fun, even when I disagree with
her. Yes, and now, you know, she doesn't have to wait a week to tell me that I'm wrong. You're always going to get trolls. You're always going to get the kind of people who, you know, it's the whole customer service thing. You never hear people saying, "Wow, this place was fantastic. They had great customer service." But you will always see a dozen things on Yelp going, "These people suck. They didn't bring me my Coke, you know, when I wanted it." It's the squeaky wheel kind of thing, you know?
"I came to this podcast at 9:05, and it says it's open until 9, and it refused to serve me ice cream."
So you're always going to get those kinds of people. What we have done is we used to do at SF Signal one episode that was huge and long, and it was a panel like this. That's what we try to do, and then an interview. And we realized people don't like that. They don't want to sit there listening to a 2-hour podcast, despite what Gary K. Wolf and Jonathan Strahan think. But so we broke it up and we started doing two. So we do one on Monday and one on Thursday. And you know you're going to get a panel on Monday, and you know you're going to get an interview on Thursday. And on Functional Nerds, we break it up as well. You know, we keep changing our format. We don't do the same things over and over. As soon as John and I start getting bored, we know it's time to change things, because we know our listeners are getting bored, whether they're commenting or not. So feedback is huge. Feedback is great, but you got to filter it. It's just like with a story, like you were saying, you know, you've got ones and fives. That's what you want when you write a story. You want lots of one stars and you want lots of five stars. Mm-hmm. The threes and fours and twos, people don't pay that much attention to. Mm. Now we're running out of time, so we got to do three questions really quick. You put your hand up first, so go.
Is there an optimal length of time for, say, a particular show? I mean, with the different types, do you stick with one, say, you do an hour show regardless of what you're talking about, or do you vary it up any, or?
It's going to depend, and I'm going to let everybody talk, but it's going to depend. There are folks who say that, like, 20 minutes is a sweet spot. Go.
It really depends on what you're doing. Yes. If it's an interview, I usually just let it kind of take its natural course. I try not to go over an hour and a half, and I consider 2 hours a hard limit for me. Different podcasts, like Writing Excuses, is always 15 minutes long, and that's perfect for them.
I think with a panel-type discussion like Revolution, the RevCast does, I think 45 minutes is perfect. But we usually go over.
I was gonna say, an audio narration is just gonna, it's dictated by the story.
I was contacted recently on two books that I put out to do, and I may have this slightly wrong, but I remember it as being a podcast interview that they wanted to do on me. I don't have any equipment. I wasn't sure what to expect, and I wasn't set up to deal with it. And so, what would I need to do on the other side of this to be able to say, yes, I want to do that, and have some idea of what I would expect?
It depends on how they're doing it. I use Skype, and I can actually call you on your phone. Yeah. I pay for that.
So I wouldn't need any equipment if I were dealing with you?
Yes. If they don't have that, then you need the best standalone microphone you can possibly afford. And I do mean what you can afford. I always tell people that. And then a set of headphones for your computer.
And I would think that if you're an author or somebody who's likely to get called up to do a podcast, it would be a good thing to invest in.
Yeah, even if you have a decent laptop with a built-in mic, just get yourself a set of headphones.
Yeah, I would say that we can call a phone from Skype. The sound quality tends to be pretty bad over the phone line. So getting a microphone is great. And honestly, even if you have the headset microphone, that's still going to be usually better than the phone line.
But don't sit there like this. That's what people do.
What's the best source of download stats for podcasts, both for the podcast maker and for a possible person who wants to advertise on said podcast?
It's going to end up being a personal preference of where you're hosting. If you're using WordPress, more than likely you're going to end up with Blueberry PowerPress, the plugin. And they will host your files, and they'll give you all those kinds of stats if you want them. You can do Google Analytics. You can do Box.net. This is, and I apologize for monopolizing this question, but your typical web hosting that you buy to host your blog will not host your audio files. You will have to go out and find another source. You cannot do it on your web hosting. Mm-hmm. It'll crash. They'll get pissed at you. They'll block you. They'll redball you. Your website will always be down. You have to go find something else. Blueberry PowerPress is just the one that's the easiest. Do you agree or disagree?
I use Podbean because that's what I first found, and it's worked for me for the last several years.
But here's the thing. If you search Podbean on Google, one of the top hits is my blog post called Why Podbean Sucks and There's No Podcast This Week. Sorry. We have been flashed the stop sign. So I want to thank everybody for coming in. Thank all the panelists. Hope you guys all had fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
a lot of fun.
There are bookmarks up here if anybody would like one. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
And we're back. Well, I hope you enjoyed that panel. I learned a lot. My eyes were open to how to create a memorable podcast, and I think from this point forward, we're going to be doing it totally differently around here.
I love the sound of my voice. You know, at that point, my voice was going. It was pretty going. Wasn't quite gone yet. I had the sore throat, but it was going.
I hear it. But I hope you did enjoy that. Next week, we're going to have Stephen Blackmore on the show. So please tune in for that. But, once again, for me this week, you can check out my music over at johnanilio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick's website is atfmb.com. And you can follow him. What's that?
I've got one last thing. I mean, this is my last chance to tell people. Come to Mile High Con on Friday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'll be there. I'm on some panels. I got a post up on my website this week that talks about my schedule. So I'm going to be wearing the new shirt, the shirt that I tweeted out and showed everybody. I'm going to be wearing those at the panel at the con. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 18, 19, 20, Mile High Con, Denver Tech Center. You know, come see us and hang out and have some fun.
Very good, very good. So enjoy all that, and we will see you next time.
Next time, next time, next time, next time.
Thanks, Mo. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition. Thank you.
still here? It's over. Go home. Go.